And after that somewhat lengthy discussion with Alicia Cole, here's a little more music to settle down by. This one is called Where the Ladder of Escalation Goes. And again, it's another one by Tsuno and David Rovics.
The forces of chaos that are in charge across the USA, in the world at large, got the puppet they needed to go for the kill. With this man in power, they can do as they will. So they launched their sneak attack, and now, despite the fact that they have no idea how to win this war or come out ahead, so most of the planet doesn't end up dead. The forces of chaos began bombing civilian targets across Iran. Then they retaliated as they said they would do in a scenario like today. U.S. bases and so much more lie in ruins by the Gulf shores. Trump ceased fire, or so he'd state, before the U.S. blockade on the strait. What's next? For the forces of chaos, this war they chose to wage against the planet entirely, on Iran and everyone simultaneously, as billions prepare southwest, east, starting the most with those with the least to starve for the empire's crimes, who asked to be living in these times. What's war games, don't they know each scenario ends the same way, you know, without fertilizer and fuel, now that the world's not run on bird stool. However this goes, it ends in starvation, where governments fall and wars within nations. Absolutely guarantee record profits for the arms and oil industry. What's next for the world?
So next up, there's a kind of a wide-ranging interview from Keith McHenry, who you heard before. I think it was done some weeks later than John Malkin's interview. It happened just a few days ago, actually. It was on July 13th. And a lot of stuff about homelessness here, of course, but also other issues like the community's response to COVID and response to those with different perspectives on COVID, and how have things changed and have they gotten better in terms of how people are being treated who, say, choose not to wear masks or disagree with vaccine mandates and mandatory vaccines, and or even want to talk about the advisability of the particular COVID vaccine. Anyway, here's Keith.
What's happening now?
All right, well, I'm on the line with Keith McHenry. Today is, goodness, the 13th of July, 2026. And Keith is flat on his back. Surgeons take note. And Keith, you were describing to me a Salt Lake City new homeless facility, but you still haven't yet found its mystery name yet, right?
No, I could get it by standing up and going to a computer.
No, don't stand up. No, that's okay.
Okay. Anyway, I was, there is this, it's like 1,300 homeless people probably men, I'm assuming, because it's all one giant. The photos I've seen of it show it. And maybe it's like 1,000 men on one side and 300 women on the other. That might be how it's designed. And but like when you're ordered into this place, you know, there's no like you're not allowed to leave. And it's unclear how you get out. Like what the, you know, it's not like a jail or prison where you have a sentence and you get, you know, a certain amount of time and then you know you get out. So this is like a possibility that the way you get out is some employee decides that you're not as mentally ill as you were, or you're not as, like some attribute of you have somehow allows you to get out. But it sounds pretty vague, you know, like it's not like straightforward. And it's just the videos I've seen and the photos of it are two giant rooms, one really giant, and then the other is smaller. And then you just are in this huge facility, and it's way outside of Salt Lake City, in like a desert area. And that's quite frightening that they're starting to do that. And it's actually somehow, I think the facility is owned by one of the prison companies that is associated with Trump. And it's part of the new Trump executive order on homelessness, which isn't so new anymore, but, you know, the one that was a few years ago. And so that's happening, and it's quite unfortunate. And the fact that there's not a lot of pushback. In fact, it's kind of there are things where there's a lot of pushback. With like, seems like there's a growing amount of resistance to the flock cameras and to the AI, you know, surveillance data centers and things like that. But there's all these like things like this attacks on the homeless that. You know, people are trying to do stuff, but we're not building enough, I think a lot of people in Santa Cruz would be appalled at the treatment of people living on the streets if they knew about it and if there was any way to kind of get everybody on the same page. But there isn't, because the local media just presents, totally demented perspective of what's going on, and people believe it, and they don't. And there's no. It's very hard for us to reach this actual really large, compassionate population, who, might actually resist or protest or do something. But there's no way to bring everybody together. We just don't have that system, the way that the people that hate the homeless do. So that's really unfortunate. But that's what's happening.
Regarding what you're talking about, Keith, here's a story inside inside Trump's homeless lockup in Utah, authorized under Trump's 2025 order. Utah's 16-acre state-run campus will hold about 1,300 unhoused people, many under court mandate, within a fenced facility where residents cannot freely leave. This is a November story from last year in what's called the Lincoln Square website. On the northern edge of Salt Lake City, trucks hum past wheat stubble, thin lines of new survey stakes. Here, Utah is building what officials describe as a compassionate response to homelessness. A 16-acre state-run campus designed to house about 1,300 people with nowhere else to go. The site, once pasture land, unfortunately, well, we get a free post, we'll get to read it. Except they have to subscribe.
Yes, that's frightening, yeah, this kind of stuff. And what's interesting is, what was it, the big hoopla before COVID was Utah, ended homelessness, and then it turned out, of course, that was a scam, but a lot of people were like, we're sympathetic to homeless people, like, oh, isn't that great, they did set up, like, kind of an interesting, housing situation. And Brent Adams actually went over there and interviewed the director, and he pointed out that it wasn't like what they were saying, because he's running, and he interviewed some of the tenants and everything, and they were very pleased about it. But the management, according to the interview I saw that Brent Adams did, was like, no, it was not Indian Home Assistant in Salt Lake City, and it was a Band-Aid. And in that particular interview, the director of that project, which was like apartment buildings, studio apartments, I don't think you had to pay much rent. It was like, you know, and you got to live in it. And it didn't have like a ton of like this case manager stuff. It didn't seem like the kind of bullshit stuff that they have. But he said, look, it's all, you know, point in time counts, a total scam. You know, it's just all a bunch of scams. But you know, we're running this thing, we're trying to do our best, and at least a few hundred people got off the streets for a bit. You know, so it was good that he was honest. Unlike what we have here with our homeless industrial complex, I guess they finally put people in.
How long ago was this story, Keith?
Well, I saw it like, I don't know, 10 years ago, and it was like. Remember there was, and I saw it like, where did I see it? I guess he was supposed to make a documentary, and ultimately, I don't think it ever happened, but he showed how far, you know, what he was doing at an event in Monterey, actually, at some film festival or something that I was invited to speak at.
Well, here's a little bit more, at least from some, I have no idea how accurate this is, but this is a story from Smart Cities Dive. And it's headlined, where the heck is it? Utah is planning to construct a vast homeless shelter. Some critics are calling it a detention camp. And this is February of this year, this story from Ryan Kushner. National Homelessness Law Center launched a campaign to prevent federal funding for projects it described as homeless detention camps, specifically referencing a 1,300-bed homeless shelter state of Utah plans to construct. Utah's proposed shelter will reportedly include involuntary detention elements for some of them sheltered there, a policy in line with Trump regime's efforts to address homelessness as part via civil commitment. Utah's plan to confine people who cannot afford rent in a government-run homeless detention camp demands national attention, stated Representative Maxwell Frost, Democrat of Florida, who joined the National Homeless Law Center's campaign. Instead of criminalizing poverty, leaders should be invested, so forth and so on.
Right. Well, the thing that's also interesting in this whole struggle is, you know, they make it Trump, and of course Trump is the national situation, you know, because that's what he's the president. But, you know, Newsom has the same, essentially the same policies, and democratically controlled jurisdictions across the country are basically doing the same thing. So they try to make it out like it's a Trump bad, you know, maybe somebody else good type of a story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, really. You know, so you can't have the same thing like the funding for... under Proposition 1 was essentially to raise money to build that exact same kind of detention centers for homeless people in California. You know, that was the purpose of it.
Initial operations of the campus are expected to begin in 2027. Campus will offer services for mental health, employment, criminal justice assistance, and housing, according to a press release from the Utah Governor's Office of Planning and Budget. There is a link, but the site can't be reached. If you go to the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty to see what they have to say about it, they describe it as, and under homeless detention camps, there's an ACLU bulletin which talks about, it's from January of this year, there's a campaign, no federal funding for homeless detention camps. Talking about Cicero Institute, your favorite, the right-wing think tank founded by former Palantir CEO billionaire Joe Lansdale, is lobbying in support of Utah's plan. And it's, there's a bunch of political folks who are opposing it. I'm looking for more information about it and don't see much here.
Well, it's going to be interesting because, you know, Joe Lonsdale, you know, was like an ally of Matt Mayhem, the mayor of San Jose. So they, you know, they're associated, potentially friends, I guess, because they're in the both in the tech business, and Joe Lonsdale provided funding for, you know, I think the maximum amount you could as far as, you know, governor's race, and then, you know, they have Ryan Coogerty as an employee of, you know, government affairs for the mayor's office in San Jose. And he's running for mayor over here. And they're all using, like, these high-tech AI solutions to homelessness. And, you know, so Lonsdale, of course, has Palantir, is, you know, aggregating all the data about everybody and all kind, every single American, you know, goes through their data system, according to... you know, what had happened with the federal government when Doge and Elon Musk, you know, were doing whatever their trip was, and apparently they just... So all that's going on, and it's pretty amazing how integrated all that is, and they're using AI in San Jose to find homeless encampments.
Let me jump back to Santa Cruz. I'm wondering, any word on whether there's been any changes in Flock camera situation? I know that, you know, there the appropriation was, I guess, defeated at the city council. I heard about it from a distance, but I'm wondering, I've been told all the Flock cameras are taken down. Is that accurate? Or?
Yeah, it seems like the ones that were in the contract with the city were taken down, but the interesting thing is the, for instance, Capitola, I think, increased their Flock cameras, so when you enter Santa Cruz from Capitola, you're recorded. And I'm not sure what kind of... And then there's other surveillance things that are in the city. There's one, which I don't know the name of it, a signal is what it's called. And so whenever you drive by it, and they're around town. I've seen quite a number of them. They automatically send the fact that you drove by it to law enforcement all across the United States. So so that's happening. And then there's a equivalent, so even more egregious versions of cameras like Flock that, like, for instance, Axion Street Footlight or something like that. And... what that does is, just like the more advanced Flock that was being deployed, and there's 100,000 Flock cameras in the U.S., and they're all around the Santa Cruz County. You know, you have a lot of them in Watsonville, and they're in the county. The only place that they're not technically in at Flock cameras themselves is in Santa Cruz. But the newer Flock cameras also do facial recognition and have audio aspect to it. And then this other Axion streetlight, they have all of that and more. And then there's been attempts for a while. Flock was integrated into Ring doorbells, and then that stopped happening. But my sense is what's going on is because they just announced that, for instance, Flock wouldn't be, they're going to discontinue Flock in LA, city of LA, but they also admit that they'll probably bring it back.
And back to tales of terror about surveillance in a moment, but here's one called Vietnam by David Rovix and Itsuno.
Talking about good versus evil, about all the bad people out there. Other times they just talk about taking their oil as soon as they can figure out where the country is that they want to invade now, since the last time worked out so well. Maybe we'll look at these days as the ones just before the empire fell, when they saw you can't rule the world by just dropping bigger bombs. What lessons did we learn from Vietnam? They keep saying we destroyed their boats. They keep saying we destroyed their planes. They keep saying now we'll open up all those shut down shipping lanes. But no matter how much they announce it, there's nothing that they can seem to do to let the traffic flow until there's an all clear from Iran. Because you can't rule the world by just dropping bigger bombs. What lessons did we learn from? More deadly than the world's seen before. Have they never even read the manual for how to fight in a people's war? They think if they bring on the shock and all their enemies will cower. They think they can just make the rules up if they have sufficient firepower. But you can't rule the world.
Statewide food not bombs in California.
We're just filtering food all the time, and that seems to be East Bay food not bombs had to move out on the telegraph when they shut off People's Park. I think they're at Amoeba or something like that. They're around there anyway.
Yeah.
And then Arcata is real busy. San Francisco's got a bunch of stuff going down. I think it's still Wednesday at 16th and Mission Bar. And I don't know all the details of that. Then Skid Row is super, super active. And there's also a...
In what city, Keith?
Skid Row, L.A.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the Pershing Square... food not bombs, which is not that far really from Skid Row, and then but they're just a different group that serve at a different time. And then you have Inland Empire is doing a lot of stuff, and they have they started some meals in Pomona and Riverside, and so they're real busy out that direction. The Orange County chapters are super, Costa Mesa, they've been doing a lot of great work. Of course, you've got a bunch in San Diego, you've got the Bakersfield, you've got the Fresno, it's got bigger and bigger lines all the time. Sacramento, Stockton, I think there's a new one finally in Chico again. Wasn't there for years, and now it's back. Eureka. There's a Weed food not bombs that I hear about randomly. There's a Willits food not bombs that's been real active recently. Isla Vista. There's a lot of them out there in the real world. Joshua Tree, I think, has a has returned. If not, it might be Palm Springs down there. There's a lot going on, but basically everybody's cooking and they're serving food and taking food to protests and trying to stop different egregious things in their community.
How many of them have literature tables?
Yeah, I don't know how many have literature tables. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, I know Inland Empire, he does the greatest, literature table every week. So that's been pretty cool. That's going on.
Is Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs providing literature these days or not?
Not very much. Ever since I broke my back, you know, this time, it's too big of a hassle for me to do that, unfortunately. And then the rest of the people are pretty busy with what they're doing. But actually, once we're over by the, now that we're at the post office, if I overcome this back problem enough to not be totally fried, I'd like to do it because it's a lot better to do it at the post office. The literature table, when it was over at the town clock, I mean, just nobody walked over there. And the wind was terrible. And it was really, the only place to put it was like where people would see it was like really not the best, most comfortable place to be, right at the crosswalk. So anyway, when my back's better, I'll be back over there because I've got a lot of great literature and, I'd like to get that out. And I've got, working on new stuff against Ryan Coonerty and everybody. So
any protests coming up from the Brave and the Free you want to talk about?
Brave and Free, I've got to make the flyer for that, but the fourth Tuesday of the month, it's going to be, we're going to do it about the surveillance and police state aspects of Santa Cruz. That's our focus. So, so I've got to make a flyer about that, but I haven't done that yet. But that's the 6 o'clock at Tusk Ridge. So, and we might actually switch over to another movie we're thinking of doing on about the CIA use of drugs and MK Ultra to control society. It's a pretty interesting 2-hour movie, but I think we're gonna have to. I'm not sure if we're doing that or the other one. So.
What about your own failed old man? Are you and you say you've been looking for a surgeon without success? Is that still you had surgery?
Well, I've got a surgeon and all that, but so originally I was supposed to speak at my archives at the University of Victoria in British Columbia, but it looks like a covert operation has successfully doomed that, and so I'm probably not going to do that. I hope I do it, but I kind of get the sense I'm not. And so that what's happening now is whenever a lecture is an event is booked now, it seems like then. But this happened. This is the second time this has happened. So, but I've only done two, so it's not like it's so it's 100% right now. But when I was speaking in. We have some volunteers here in Santa Cruz that also volunteer. One young lady's going to Brandeis and outside of Boston, and she's with Waltham Food Not Bombs, and they were going to celebrate their 5th anniversary, and they invited me to speak there. But the flyer that I made about being attacked at London Nelson by the DSA, and Chris Crone, refusing to, tell me I couldn't participate in this meeting to try to stop the high-rise buildings because I wasn't vaccinated, and the tabby cat, not allowing me to go in there because I wasn't vaccinated, and then Joe's, foodie for the people movie, I was banned from that. So I wrote a flyer about that. Well, that's ended up on Wikipedia. And then, so what's happened is that the informants in the different communities, like in Victoria, they go around and tell everyone I have this flyer, and there's no way they should let me come and speak because, I wrote this flyer. So, anyway, so it looks like I'm being canceled in Victoria after.
Have you been informed you're not welcome there or not?
Well, it's very interesting how they do it. So, originally what happened was It was supposed to be a big event, you know, sponsored by the university, and then I was supposed to do the Anarchist Book Fair for 2 days, then take one day off, and then do this big event. And that's how it was, and we were working on that for a long time. And then the guy that was inviting me, that runs the archives, he emailed me the link to the table at the Anarchist Book Fair. And in his email, he says, whatever you do, don't mention anything about COVID. The organizers of the book fair are talking about information that's on Wikipedia about you. And so that's what had happened in Waltham as well, Boston. They said there's information about you on Wikipedia, so you can't come and speak.
When was
so that? So anyway, that's the first notice that I of something that was going on. And then I wrote him. I said, "Well, are you able to cover the airfare, and what are the arrangements for lodging?" And my assumption: Kathleen and I would fly up there. We'd do the book fair. I would have a table and be selling my books. So when I filled out the form, I said that I had Anarchist Cookbook, Hungry for Peace, and Soup Street. That's what I said my wares would be. You know, they asked what your wares would be, and that's what I would be bringing, right? And then when I wrote that about the accommodation, they said, "Oh, we don't have any money for airfare, why don't you drive?" He asked me to. I said, "You should just drive up. And you could do like an event in, Portland, and then one in Seattle and Bellingham, and then after your event at the university, you just this is how you get across the back into the United States on the ferry, and you can stay with friends in the United States." And they said, "Well, we haven't booked a room yet." So that to me sounded like it's not very promising. It's no longer a big event where this university is sponsoring it and so on. And, it was really rude, essentially. And, obviously I can't drive up there. I can barely drive to downtown Santa Cruz from Atta. So how am I going to drive all the way up there? And just the assumption that I would drive this huge long distance, and he gave me all these details of the ferries, like it was assumed I was going to be driving. And, it's just unfortunate. And so my sense is it's just a passive-aggressive way to say we're not interested anymore because you're...
Did this contradict how he was talking about it before?
This university is sponsoring it and so on. It was really rude, essentially. And, obviously I can't drive up there. I can barely drive to downtown Santa Cruz from Atta. So how am I going to drive all the way up there? And just the assumption that I would drive this huge long distance, and he gave me all these details of the ferries, like it was assumed I was going to be driving. And, it's just unfortunate. And so my sense is it's just with a passive-aggressive way to say we're not interested anymore because you're...
Did this contradict how he was talking about it before?
Yeah, up until the, he emailed me about something up for the literature table, it was a totally different story. He had an email to all the Food on Bombs chapters and in British Columbia to come there, and it's all going to be great, and blah, 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 blah. But this whispering campaign that seems to have worked, seems to have worked. And it's the same exact thing that happened in Boston. So it's not like some kind of idiot, sometimes you get like these morons that are just want to cause trouble and so on. But I'm starting to find that basically the anarchist community is very authoritarian. Just like at the really, really free market at Sub Rosa, they always want you to wear masks and stuff like that. I don't know if they're still doing that, but they really treated me like shit when I went there one time and didn't have a mask, and everybody there did have a mask. My friend Ingram was like, oh, so yeah, they really get down if you don't have a mask at that. So, and then I was supposed to talk to Gaines Tracy about maybe I could sell my books at the, you know, the Howard's Inn book fair. And he's like, yeah, you use a corner of a table, I'll find something out for you. And then I look up the actual website, and masks were mandatory. That was like 6 months ago, masks were mandatory. And so I wrote him, I said, what's the deal here with masks being mandatory, you know? And they said, oh, well, there was some, in the planning committee, there was a vulnerable person, and they said they were really had to wear masks, you know, because of, they were vulnerable people. And instead of it being like, and it was mandatory, you know, it was an authoritarian statement, you know, it was like, you know, it's very opposite of anarchy, but all the anarchist book fairs now, your mandatory masks at the book fairs, and essentially it's pretty clear that the anarchist community was infiltrated even before COVID, and they've just pushed this whole thing that the vulnerable people, yep, everybody has to protect vulnerable people while wearing the mask, and before that it was you had to prove that you were vaccinated, and it's like ridiculous, because it's completely authoritarian. It's crazy, because there's like private citizens, like anarchists, enforcing government orders, you know. I thought we were opposed to that. So it's just very unfortunate. So I suspect, I don't know. I'm thinking of writing a Substack article about that. You know, I've been an anarchist and written the anarchist cookbook and lived an anarchist. I lived for almost most of my adult life without a social security number or any ties to authority. I helped start Food Avant. I did homes at jails. I did pirate radio. You know, I lived as an anarchist since high school. And
more about Keith's experiences in a moment. But not only is this another musical break, it's also an apology for the thumping that you may hear going on in the background. I don't know what's causing it. Something I would suspect at Keith's end. Who knows? In any case, you probably won't be hearing it through this next musical number, which is called Russian Narrative.
In real life, outside the propaganda, history unfolded. The world and our perception of it in so many ways were molded by what actually transpired and by what the powers that be wanted us to understand about our history. In real life, oligarchs in control, they run the USA. They pretend it's not the case with every word they say. But if you follow the money, if you look at what they do, you see they buy the leaders who represent you. This is not a Russian narrative, actually. Let's talk about reality. Size. these American weapons. For some uncertain reason, Russia won't retaliate. So I have to sing these words now. I might not be here if I wait. This is not a Russian narrative, actually. Let's talk about reality. This is not a Russian narrative, actually. Let's talk about reality. Let's talk about reality.
Authoritarian behavior by people in Santa Cruz, and and you can't talk to anybody. It's a mental illness, basically, because you can't talk to anybody about it. There's, even though the number of deaths, it's like the number of COVID deaths was actually a computer model at Oxford University, and then you look into it and it goes, yeah, it wasn't actual numbers of real people who, died of the disease of COVID, and then even if you take the real numbers that they say is the case, it's not enough that 7 years later you got to wear a mask at to attend an anarchist event, and then if you don't go along with that whole thing, you can't come. All the other information that I can share with people about Funa bombs, about the Funa bombs around the world, about swatting, all these things that people at an anarchist book fair might be interested in, and my books on anarchist subjects, and they could potentially, talk with me and stuff, but that is too dangerous to have me come there and talk to them, because why? And there's an assumption, and I think what they do is, because it's a whispering campaign, it's by intelligence, by informants in the anarchist community, and there's an assumption that if you didn't get vaccinated, then you're a Trumper, and therefore you're right-winger, and you're homophobe, and blah, 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 and that's how they spin it. In fact, somebody made the Santa Cruz Funa Bombs Twitter account is all only about how I'm a anti-trans, homophobe, anti-vaxxer Trumper. That's all that's on it. There's a whole bunch of stuff about how far right wing I am, and of course none of it is accurate. In fact, the left was against mandates, was against big pharma, was against authoritarian measures by the government, and then all of a sudden March 14th, 2020, that all the left went to, okay, whatever the government says, you got to do it. Big Pharma's great. You don't need to test vaccines. You can just, you have to do them because we're told we must, because Bill Gates said we have to, and Trump said we had to, and blah, blah, blah. And it's incredible. People are mentally ill. There's nothing you can do. They're completely lost the plot.
Has this affected you, Keith, in Santa Cruz recently, in the last year, let's say?
Oh, in Santa Cruz, they know I don't give a shit about that stuff. In fact, I think that all the people that jacked me up all through that period are embarrassed because, the thing is, I live here. So I never got COVID. I never, I didn't do any of those things and everything's fine. Whereas, for instance, the woman that first attacked me at the DSA, she was in bed for months with COVID, and she was fully vaccinated and blah, 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 did all the stuff you're supposed to, but I never spent 4 hours and I didn't spend 15 minutes in bed with COVID, and I was outside. I never followed I never was quarantined, and I just blew off the whole thing. And the reason that, my best friend, Carl Chasky, who could not have been a more amazing anarchist, he lived anarchy just like I did. And he passed away, but his girlfriend, who was one of my dearest friends, Shannon, in the 90s, it was decided, in conversations with us, she decided she'd become a virologist because of biological weapons and gain of function. So she got her PhD in virology, and she worked at the NIH on the Moderna vaccine for 4.5 years under Fauci. And before the vaccine was released in the Warp Speed, she came to visit me, and she said that absolutely it was, she couldn't get, you know, the 80% of her lab animals died prematurely, and the vaccine didn't, you know, save their lives. And she said, it's pretty, you know, it's not safe yet, you know, it could be very dangerous to use the COVID vaccines. So she strongly suggested that I not get vaccinated. She wasn't going to get vaccinated. She didn't get vaccinated. And she said, maybe someday it will, you know, messenger RNA vaccines would work, but she, well, you know, it might be decades off in the future before they're safe. So, you know, here you have a leading virologist at the NIH suggesting strongly that you not get vaccinated. So that, and she's an anarchist, you know, we've been in the anarchist, you know, she's done food on bombs in Baltimore for years, you know, not all that. So, you know, but no, people are just like...
Has she gone public with her position in any printed material?
No, because she did not want to die. You know how that is. You know, you don't want to die.
In the
so
sense,
she actually changed her name and everything. You know, so it was very dangerous. You know, she had to use aliases and everything like that. So, yeah, no.
Has she published anything under an alias?
No, no. Did she? She was right. I don't know if she did anything about that particular thing. I don't know, really. She basically quit being a virologist I think in January she said that all the websites where she was putting her data on and everything went black, and that freaked her out. So that's when she gave notice of a job and the lab she was working at in Seattle. And like a lot of those people that actually knew what was going on, it was just... you know, they just stopped doing any kind of that work, you know. So it's just too dangerous. I did do a long interview with her on the history of gain of function and how she got started in it. And it was, and part of it was to, you know, start out like anybody in those days were doing, that she was not suicidal and she was perfectly healthy. And then she...
And where is the interview archived?
On my computer here. Yeah. And then I made copies for her to have where she was. And she gave it to other friends. So if she was killed, then we would have the information. So
you want it put out?
No. It's a huge file. It's like an hour and a half long file. I don't know.
But you,
I don't think she wants it. She doesn't want it, but she's asked me not to,
not to
make a big deal of it. I mean, and now she's a professor and teaching stuff in Virginia. But, yeah, I mean, it was, like, really rough on her. It was really too bad. She loved being a scientist, and it was just a shame. But a lot of her colleagues, a lot of, you know, people that were working on developing these COVID vaccines, you know, knew it was not ethical to let alone just release it into society at all.
So no one in Santa Cruz recently is discriminating against you because of this, or are you still finding yourself being told to put on a mask anywhere?
No one dares. Everybody, I get the sense that everybody's embarrassed that they did that during that period, that they realized it was stupid. That's my sense, you know, because the people that attacked me are, you know, for not being vaccinated, they're nice again and all that. And, no, I think it was, you know.
You and Joy Schindler-Decker have kissed and made up?
She hadn't kissed and made up, but they definitely, you can tell that no one wants to bring this up again because, all the people that attacked me at that Joy for Mayor event have got bad cases of COVID over and over and over again.
Really?
So, It's probably not real comfortable.
It was your fault, Keith. You went in there without a mask.
Yeah, well, I mean, the issue wasn't even a mask. The issue was you had to be vaccinated. And because I didn't have my vaccine passport.
Oh, right.
And I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, just imagine, you know, they have like those, all the crazy-ass things, you know, that went on. It was completely ludicrous. And that's what's amazing about, Sub Rosa, you know? What the fuck is wrong with people? It's obvious that the whole thing was bullshit. It can't be more obvious, you know? All the people that followed the government orders that got sick, and maybe not all, but everyone that I ever met that followed government orders got sick, and the people that didn't follow government orders didn't get sick. I mean, it's a weird thing. And sure, a lot of right-wing Trump people refuse to get vaccinated. And it doesn't mean I'm a right-wing Trump supporter because that's what's so incredible, that you're automatically, if you've refused a vaccine, and then you have total evidence that that was really the right decision.
Other than the vaccine issue, have you found yourself rubbing noses with, say, anti-war folks in the Brave and the Free who are, perhaps on other issues, Trump supporters?
Yeah, there are Trump supporters in Brave and Free Santa Cruz, correct.
Mm-hmm.
And there is also far leftists in Brave and Free Santa Cruz, there's no liberal Democrats in Brave and Free Santa Cruz.
Oh, dear.
No Democrats at all. But it's either libertarians or, Republicans or far left-wing activists. And that's basically all it is.
State of the anti-war movement in Santa Cruz?
There is no anti-war movement in Santa Cruz, unfortunately. It's just, you can't get an anti-war movement going here. It's just not possible. Particularly Resource Center for Nonviolence is pro-war. You know, they support the war against Russia. And every time we've tried to do any kind of event, the last three events we tried to have that surrounding that, were told that we were racist and we couldn't do it. So at Resource Center for Nonviolence. Peter is, kind of the oldest connected person to the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and he's
Peter Lumsdale.
What's his name? Peter Lumsdale, I haven't seen him in a long time. He's like up in, in Port Townsend now or something?
Mm-hmm.
But the other Peter, whatever his name is, I forget his last name. He's got two last names. He's in the same like nonviolence organization as Don Lane, Scott Kennedy, and them. They were in this affinity group, Redwood affinity group or something like that. Anyway. They're not very politically sophisticated, and they're more about the Resource Center for Nonviolence is just basically a liberal Democratic Party clubhouse. So that's all that is. And since they're like the only deviant behavior that they support is they still are against the genocide. But otherwise, and they still allow Palestinian rights groups to meet there, but no anti-war groups other than that. That's that. And when I did call for a protest against the war in Iran, I chose intentionally the same exact time and location as Indivisible's vigil. And they have their little flags for war against Russia. You know, they love that. They have the little Nazi flags that they bring out. But because of course the people that are funding Indivisible also funded the coup and both coups in Ukraine, the Orange Revolution and then the Maidan coup in 2014. And so, of course, Indivisible, they can't possibly be opposed. I mean, in fact, the very first event after Trump was elected was Hands Off NATO, because they had that false maybe they're smart enough to know it was all bullshit, but they were pretending like Trump was going to stop the war against Russia because he was a Putin puppet and all the complete, that whole Hillary Clinton, John Podesta scam about the P tapes and all that stuff. It was total nonsense when it turned out they were doing even worse. And people are not real. It's really difficult to navigate things that, you know, because people like are very low information in Santa Cruz, extremely low information in the liberal Democratic world. And I remember I was at an Indivisible event. Like, they pretty much ignored the ICE thing until the two white people were killed in Minneapolis. Then that's the only thing that Indivisible does that is not, we hate Trump, is ICE now. They allow that, but they don't do anything. They've never done an anti-war thing. They've never been against Trump's wars, which would be, you know, if you were against Trump, that would be really good. But since their money comes from the military industrial complex, they're not going to be against Trump's war. But, you know, so it's very fascinating. But anyway, I was hanging out there, and Chris was telling me he fell for the lie that, Chris Prone.
Yeah.
He's a very nice guy. I like Chris a lot. But he's very low information. He does not have any information about political events or how, you know, how that all works. It's, you know, he knows a lot about local politics in Santa Cruz, but he doesn't know how. So he fell for the whole lie that the shots people were putting out about that, and Mossad, of course, putting out, and CIA were pushing, and it was in the New York Times and crap like that.
This time, the musical break is Define Ceasefire by Rovix and Aitsuno.
Good on NPR, talk about how there was a ceasefire, but there's not one now. It's just how it goes, like a natural law, like a broken promise, just a human flaw. No way of knowing from what they said how all those families ended up dead. Did they violate the ceasefire? You don't want to say, because it's always Israel and the USA. Define ceasefire, maybe it depends, but most people would say it's when the firing ends. What was the state of peace like? How were things before? Was the Gaza Strip besieged prior to the war? Were they being shot at every Friday afternoon? Surrounded by ghetto walls from July to June. Carpet bombing Lebanon, killing medics and drivers in the ambulances. They come in to rescue the survivors of the complete destruction wrought with USAID, Israeli bombs, American made. Define ceasefire, maybe it depends, but most people would say it's when the firing ends. They'll say it's them, this is what they'll claim. Who broke the ceasefire? They'll say it's not the same. The war on Palestine, the war on Lebanon, neither is related to the war on Iran. As for any thoughts about Venezuela being connected to the blockade of Cuba or the rogue state, the global empire, which we can see is run by thieves and liars.
He does not have any information about political events or how, you know, how that all works. It's, you know, he knows a lot about local politics in Santa Cruz, but he doesn't know how. So he fell for the whole lie that the, you know, the shots people were putting out about that, and Mossad, of course, putting out, and CIA were pushing, and it was in the New York Times and crap like that for a short bit, that the, you know, that there was that intentional devaluation of the currency by the U.S. Treasury Department that Scott Bessent bragged about. And then merchants went out to protest that, and then Mossad took over the protests and started killing cops and stuff. But the way Chris saw it, and because that's the way NPR and CNN and the New York Times were spinning it, was that the ruthless government of Iran had killed 30,000 peaceful protesters, which of course never happened. And now they're saying, I guess it's 40,000 peaceful protesters, but none of that happened. And it's hard to imagine you can stick with that story when you look at the millions of people that showed up to the funeral, you know. And so, you know, they just easily be duped by the liberal media. It's incredible how. And then to make your decision, and that's what happened with the Resource Center for Nonviolence. You know, they're, oh yeah, you know, it was unprovoked invasion. Even though there's massive amount of evidence that Azov was already dominant in the Stefan Bandera Nazis, had it, you know, really prominent even before the Maidan coup, and they were the ones hired to do the Maidan coup. And then they, you know.
Getting back to Santa Cruz, any commentary on Steve Plaich or Joe Williams, who in the past were, you know, anti-war people, and I would say, well, I haven't talked to Joe recently about these issues. I heard bad stuff about him when you and I spoke last.
Yeah, well, Joe was over, you know, it's really amazing. He had some idea that that Brave and Free was this right-wing organization because of it, you know, it was completely stupid. And then he smeared me on the activist list, and it was like, and it was so dumb, man. It just showed what a fucking total idiot this guy is. So he, like, without talking to me, I mean, he basically smeared me. He said, you can't be here, you know, doing anything at the Resource Center because you're a far right wing homophobe, and he's like, you know, transphobe. And basically what he did was, like, there was like a link to like Catherine Austin Fitz, who was actually, you know, an amazing person. Kathleen, my girlfriend, knows her from The Farm, and was on Dennis Bernstein's show. That's how she knew about him, and then she went and took her economic permaculture class at The Farm. So The Farm is not like a far right wing place. That's like started by Stephen Gaskin, and, you know, I mean, what the fuck? And you can't really say, Dennis Bernstein and KPFA is some far right wing radio station. You know, that's. But anyway, that's. But the thing was that on the, she was, there was a link on her website, Solari.com. About how you could get gold and buy gold and silver. Well, he has a knee-jerk reaction that if you buy gold and silver, you're a right-wing prepper, you know? And that, I mean, all it was like, now, you know, it might be wise to buy gold and silver, you know? If you want, with the economic crisis, it might be something to do. You know, it's not automatically a right-wing thing, but he just knee-jerk. Oh, yeah.
I recently interviewed Steve Plaich. Any thoughts about Steve?
Well, I haven't talked to him in a long time. I have no idea. I don't know of anything. I know his politics is sort of just, my sense is he's a liberal Democrat. He does the UN thing at, I don't know. I've never gotten any impression that he was very
What about that Norse character? Any feeling about him?
Well, he's a funny guy. He's always trying to organize these protests and getting 8 people to show up. But,
All right, that's enough of that shit.
Yeah. So anyway, there's that. Yeah, I mean, but there are all these people are really nice people, but Joe Williams, I really am suspect of, because that to be so totally closed-minded about things, and then that whole list he put out, you know, he would like quote all the things was in the New York Times and NPR and Washington Post and CBS and NBC and BBC. Those were all his evidence that I was a far right-wing crazy person. Well, those are all like intelligence vetted publications and completely lie. You know, like if you thought the New York Times was, if you thought the stuff in the New York Times was real, no wonder you'd be completely lost. You'd be just like Chris Cohn thinking that, you know, 40,000 innocent peaceful protesters were killed by the Iranian militant government.
Anything coming up next week or next month that you want to comment on, other than, of course, the twice weekly Food Not Bombs meal? And
yeah, we got that at the post office every Saturday and Sunday. Right now, I don't know. I really need to get organizing against Ryan Coonerty and Meta and all that, you know, because they're incredible, you know. Now, here's an interesting thing. I recently, you know, because I'm working on a thing called Bloody Santa Cruz, and, you know, Joby Aviation is a defense contractor, right? And, but around here, they're the flying, you know, pilotless air taxis. And so they asked for Amy Chin Mills, or Mills Chin, or whatever her name is, who's running, who, you know, I would vote for against Ryan Coonerty in the mayor's race, for sure. And anyway, so she, the one positive thing that she, you know, it's kind of funny, because she did the Flock protest, which was successful, but we were trashed when we did the Flock protest before that to try to stop the contract originally, because it was Brave and Free that was trying to stop it, and, you know, we got trashed by her and everybody for being far right wing. And then, but then she took up the fight and got the contract, you know, stopped. But also, she did another interesting thing. She pointed out that the city of Santa Cruz had provided an interest-free loan of $500,000 to Joby Aviation. Interest-free. And yet, supposedly, they're, you know, having a rough time financially. Well, I go and find the founder of, the owner of Joby Aviation is worth $1,500,000,000. And so what, the city's giving him money for free? That's incredible.
Nope. You know, did you verify this, or did you just, this is a rumor?
No, it's all verified, yeah. All in publications, and, you know, it was in the Sentinel, right?
Well, now, the Sentinel, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm going to stop now before it's too late, and give you the last words.
Well, anyway, go to foodonbombs.net, and then also, even though, you know, so I had a book opening for my memoir, Soup Street, London Nelson. A lot of people came. It was really great. I put out a lot of press releases. Not one local media covered it at all. Now, my classmate in the writing workshop, Angela Glass, she had an opening at Bookshop Santa Cruz, basically around the same time. She got an amazing amount of local media about her. You know, she walked every street in Santa Cruz County and wrote a book about it. It was a really nice book. It's sort of like a Henry David Thoreau type, you know, book. So, a beautiful book, but I got no media.
Now, wait a minute. I publicized this event.
You did it, you know, yeah, like my friends, but no Sentinel, no Lookout Santa Cruz, no, you know, Channel 8 TV, no,
Santa Cruz Local.
No, Santa Cruz Local, not a word. No, case. I wasn't, the only other, so it was you on Indie Bay, basically, and it was John Malcolm recorded me and had a nice thing on KVFC. And then Sarah Ringler had, advertised it like 3 weeks in a row on Surf City Times. But there was no Lookout Santa Cruz, no Sentinel.
Any thoughts, anything you want to say about Gail Williamson?
Yeah, she passed away in Madison with her family, and we are trying to organize a memorial. We're still trying to get a hold of the family to see if they have one planned. I get a lot of calls from people that want to know when the memorial is. So.
She's also known as Gail Page, for listeners who don't know.
Correct, right, yeah. So she, I think she was, 83 years old when she passed away.
How old?
83. 83. Yeah, and she was a really important activist in town. She was also a free freer and from my Substack, and we were very, very close friends. And I lost a lot of close friends recently, and that was it was really tragic. And it's basically medical malpractice, unfortunately, where they, essentially when she went to the doctor, at one point the doctor goes, "Wow, your cancer's a lot worse than it was last time." And Gail's like, "You never told me that I had cancer last time." So they basically let the cancer progress until it was a death sentence. And never made it clear that that's what was going on with her. And she was in and out of the hospital and doctors for like a year before her death. And
the name of the doctor was.
I have no idea what the name of the doctor was.
Well, anything you want to say about her personally in terms of her life? I don't know. Anything you want to say about her?
She was amazing. She was a she's a very radical left person, right? And she had like amazing authors and come to the jungle where she lived up on Spring Street, and kind of had like these some people I wish I'd seen, like Ursula Le Guin. I didn't go to that. I did something else, and I couldn't believe I'd miss. Then she passed away. So it was a very important, utopian science fiction writer, anarchist, and...
Who was this?
Ursula Le Guin.
Oh, Ursula, sure.
Yeah, and then she had a whole... She would invite people that had really amazing theories about all kinds of things, and then she'd host them at their house, and it was just incredible.
You're talking about Gail. You're talking about Gail Page, right?
Yeah, Gail Page.
Because you mentioned Ursula Le Guin, so I don't know.
Yeah, that was a person that came to her house and spoke about her book.
She also provided living quarters for, I guess Brent Adams lived there for a while, and other folks. And
Steve Flesh lived there.
Steve Flesh, and the Free Radio had its transmitter there for a while.
Yeah, and she. Liked that, we shared far left anarchist politics. And so I saw her at Woodstock's during the lockdown. She was in the outside there with Eddie. And other than Jay Rizal and Drew Lewis, I thought that the only other left-wingers that had refused the vaccine was Kathleen and me, and of course my friend Shannon Murray, and who the virologist, and I thought everybody else was just, only Trumpers, which was kind of weird since Trump was the one pushing even worse speed. But anyway, so I was so happy, like, oh wow, there's other kindred spirits, other people share my politics and also refuse to fall for the whole scam.
The government line. Yeah. All right, well, I'm gonna roll with you on that one, Keith. And forgive me thank you for spending time, and forgive me too, and talk to you again, I guess, whenever you feel like it.
Yeah, I hope so. I'll see you on the flip side.
I hope so. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.